The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Here's a quick question for you. How did you sleep last night? If your battle for a good night's sleep feels relentless, I have the answer. It's a podcast called Sleepwave, with meditations and hypnosis created to help you fall asleep. My relaxation techniques will help you feel calm and ready for sleep with soft music that will help you fall asleep in minutes. Most listeners never hear the end of an episode. So search Sleepwave on your favorite podcast app and find out why over a million people have fallen asleep to my voice.
Do not underestimate the power of PlayStation.
Hey, friends. Welcome to Beyond episode 534. My name is Marty Sleva. I'm joined by Andrew Goldfarb.
Hello.
And Tina Meany.
Hello.
Tina, welcome. Thanks. It's your first day at IGN.
It is, yes. All of a couple hours here now.
Who are you and why are you here?
I am a human. I am on Earth. Yep. I am here to lead the game's editorial team.
So technically, you're our boss.
You're both bosses.
You're gonna manage us.
Yeah. It's all gonna be terrible mandates from here on out.
Oh no.
That's sort of been our careers.
Yeah.
But what's give a little bit of a rundown, sort of your history in the industry.
So I've been writing about games for too long now, about like almost a decade, which is a weird thing to say, and makes me feel old. I started like in college doing some, you know, typical, like starting off doing news and doing some previews and stuff and, at a small site. And then out of college, I started at Complex Magazine and ran the games channel back when that still existed. It no longer exists, unfortunately. Mainstream is tough for games.
Yep.
Yeah. And then I was deputy editor at Kotaku for roughly 4 years. And then I was at Mashable doing, leading the games content there. Mm-hmm. And here I am today at IGN. Super excited.
A pretty good journey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Andrew and I were just talking about how we're both about to hit our milestones. 7 years?
Yeah. We both started in 2011.
It just seems like such a long time.
When you reflect on it, you're like, no, that can't be true.
Yeah. I'm like, how have I been doing this longer? That almost as long as like high school and college combined.
Oh God!
Yeah, that's how you know you're getting older.
I know.
Your Facebook feed is all like babies
and I'm just in constant pain.
You're like my knees, hips.
Yeah, you guys are making me feel real good about being.
Oh yeah, happy birthday, Andrew!
Happy birthday, Andrew!
Yeah, speaking of getting old.
Today's Andrew's 32nd birthday.
Yep. One step closer to death.
I think you're one.
You got a way to go.
Look, and we Barrett made a picture for you.
Thanks,
Barrett. Your official birthday card.
Wow, I look very. I like that completely non-smiling photo that he used.
Well, that's because
it's very persona.
That is very persona.
You know, you have to be intense.
I have to be. That's true. I have to steal hearts.
So if Andrew Singh is persona, do you have a thing? Like, do you have a game that you don't shut up about?
Not quite. I'm all over the board. So like at Kotaku, I was the Borderlands person. And I nonstop talked about Borderlands at all times, which is funny.
Yeah. Full disclosure, I once worked at Gearbox Software.
So that was my thing. But in general, it's always been like first-person shooters, so like Borderlands kind of fit into that. Mm. These days, I've become a super casual, and I'm like, stories are great, and like I'll play the hell out of like a Telltale game or something like that. And it's one of those things where I can rope my non-gamer friends into playing with me. So it's always a good like access.
I mean, those are the games I go back to probably the most like stuff like when I still had PT was to be like, hey, sit down and play PT with me or play Journey or any of the Walking Dead games or even like Catherine.
And stuff that's super cinematic like Last of Us or anything that like feels more like a movie story. I was just going to say I'm really excited to have someone into Borderlands here because like I can't cover it. And so it's like.
I will take that mantle for you.
they've been talking about the next one for so long that I don't even know anymore because I haven't been there in so long. So it's like when that eventually happens.
I mean, you can't like forever. You can't cover it.
Yeah, I think not.
I
guess that, it's like that weird. I would just have to disclose. Yeah. Like I could write a Borderlands preview, just disclose. That feels like it'd be weird.
Yeah, I mean, it also sort of is along the lines of, like, if you were working on a specific project and then you're no longer in any way privy to any of those conversations.
Yeah.
But it's difficult to draw those lines, too, of course.
I think I'm there. I don't think anything.
I imagine so. It's been a few years, right?
Yeah, it's been. I left.
Battleborn was the main thing you worked on, right?
Pre-sequel in Battleborn, yeah. And, like, a little bit of Homeworld and, like, all that stuff out.
Yeah. Like you said, what about Battleborn 2?
Who knows?
Probably not going to happen.
Not you. You don't know.
I definitely don't know.
I know.
That's the most important thing.
Probably not going to happen. We were talking about games that are cinematic that we can sit down and play with non-gamer friends. Detroit Good Become Sunday. Human. Thank you. Seems to be one of those games. We got a release date for Detroit finally. May 25th.
Woo.
How do we feel about that? Well, that was a woo.
I think that's a really smart, like that pre-E3 spot. It's where they put The Last of Us. It's kind of where Uncharted 4 ended up coming out. Like there's that nice little window where not a lot comes out where people actually have time to look at it like right before E3.
Yeah, that was where Witcher was a couple years ago. I think the Arkham Knight was in a slot like that. And it sort of makes sense, like one final push that's like the early summer game. And for us, we're always like, man, you got to get that game out before E3. 99% of people don't. Like, they care about E3 in terms of, like, the coverage, but they don't have to fly there. And, like, they don't have to, like, go cover E3, so they can just play this from their homes. I don't know, but, like, we didn't really get a lot of details with this release date. We just got the, obviously, May 25th. How are you guys feeling about sort of that in terms of, like, you know, Sony's catalog for the rest of the year?
Well, it's after God of War, which is good. Mm-hmm. I feel like that gets, like, God of War is April. Like, Detroit's a weird one, right? Because, like, I don't know that the release date really matters. Like, I feel like this is one of those games that, like, the people who are going to flock to it are going to flock to it. I don't really know commercial prospect-wise what Detroit looks like.
Well, and, like, did Heavy Rain or, like, Beyond Two Souls, like, they'll sell extremely well? Heavy Rain
sold pretty well.
Yeah.
I don't know, honestly. I can't imagine Beyond sold super well.
Well, that's the weird thing about it is, like, everyone is crazy high on God of War and Spider-Man right now. Because every time they show it, everyone's like, oh, this demo looks really cool and this looks great. Whereas I feel like Detroit, they've shown it a bunch and we're all sort of mixed on, like, we went to get coffee earlier. We're talking about how we feel about Detroit and we're all sort of like cautiously optimistic, maybe?
I'm cautiously optimistic. Yeah. It could go really well or it could be one of those like empty promises kind of a thing where you're like branching storylines and like your choices actually matter. And I feel like every time we've been told that, they actually have not really mattered all that much.
Yeah, it's like even the Telltale games, it's like they're this weird like, it's like two, it's like a circle kind of or like an oval where it's like at a point it branches, but then they meet back up at the top anyway. Yeah. So I don't know, like I think you're totally right. I think we've heard so many people be like, oh, like your choices matter. And then it's either the same ending or just one of two endings.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, inherently it's difficult to develop for like so many branching paths. So in some way, at some point, it's going to have to get to a point where like you're still being leaded down a certain path.
Yeah.
Allegedly, this script is so robust, but and it's everything's being like written around it in such a way that hopefully there will be those like really impactful moments.
Yeah, I always laugh at those pictures when a developer like it happened. David Cage has done this before, and then most recently with Kingdom Come Deliverance, where they're like, "Look at our script," and it's like as tall as like a toddler, and you're like, "Is it good?
Is it double space?
Yeah, is it?" But I'm like,
I know that truth.
But I'm also
I went to college.
Like I've read short stories that are really good. Like that doesn't mean this is good.
Yeah, Beyond. I think for Beyond, they did a mailing. I think they mailed to press like essentially like two phone books stacked on top of each other of like the Beyond script.
That's real swag.
Like, that is real swag.
It's like all the mailmen were like, "Why are you?
Why
doing
is this happening? What a waste of paper." Yeah. Yeah, that's really interesting. You talking about sort of the false promises of like branching paths and player agency actually reminds me, Andrew and I were at DICE recently, which is sort of a, we hosted a bunch of the panels on, IGN, but it's pretty much where developers go to learn from each other and to sort of, it's not for us, it's for them. But I got to sit down with, Chet Falasek, who was a longtime writer at Valve on, Portal and Half-Life Episode 2 and Left 4 Dead. And he is now, working with the team who made Surgeon Simulator and I Am Bread on pretty much the game that seems to want to actually be the first one to do this of the no matter what you do, the game will react to it. And if a character dies, the game will deal with it. If you want to become best friends with that character, the game will deal with it. If you want to abandon that character, the game will deal with it. And he was talking, like, we went to the talk. And
yeah, and you can watch the full talk on IGN.
You watch the full talk on IGN. It's super interesting, but it's definitely all in sort of vagaries and, like, conceptual things where I'm like, this sounds really cool. I don't know what step two is. But step three sounds like a really interesting game. But I just don't, I can't comprehend, because I've never made a game.
Yeah.
I just can't comprehend what step two is in that.
It's that old, there's, I think it's a South Park joke where it's like, step one, steal something. Step two, question mark, question mark, question mark. Step three, profit. Like,
yeah.
It's totally that.
So it's
like,
that. Yeah.
That's, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's good when people experiment because even if it fails, at least it gives people, and it is kind of the spirit of GDC, right? Like, mm-hmm. you're just like, let's try it. Let's see. And so even if Detroit doesn't become this, like, you know, the prized, the, like, finally we made it happen, mm-hmm. like, choices actually mattered for once moment, then it's still an interesting thing that someone is doing, that someone's trying.
Yeah.
Pursuing.
Well, and it's interesting because it's about, we're talking about sort of the video game concepts of, like, choice and free will, but it's also a story about choice and free will. Like, it's about androids and artificial intelligence.
I was going to say Andrew. I was like, oh, no.
It's about Andrew.
All about you.
It's
today.
About you. Special birthday boy. No, so I feel like it's interesting that, like, unlike, you know, Heavy Rain was sort of a serial killer David Fincher movie with an unreliable narrator, and Beyond Two Souls was a teen psychological horror out of sequence mess. Whereas this is, like, to me, just super interesting because I'm like, your mechanics and the themes of the actual story are finally interwoven together.
Yeah, at the very least, I mean, it's interesting because we're, you know, there's a new Blade Runner,
mm-hmm.
and yeah. like our technology is getting to that point where AI being like a feasible thing, where like possibly terrifying thing,
yeah.
is potentially getting more. We're getting like closer and closer to that reality. So even just as a narrative, is an interesting thing to explore.
Yeah, I mean, it is super yeah. funny that if you would have seen like some of those like Kara trailers and stuff from Detroit when we were kids, it'd have been like, man, that is so futuristic. Whereas now you're like, yeah, that's. Probably what
we're like 2 years.
Yeah,
from that?
Like that yeah. literally might be what Detroit's like. I don't know. I haven't been there since I was a kid, so maybe. So again, so putting this, we have God of War on April 20th. Mm-hmm. Now we have May 25th. We're going to have Detroit,
and then we have three completely nebulous 2018 games that could go anywhere.
Yeah. So these were the early and the spring games, and then so for 2018, we still have Dreams from Media yep. Molecule. We still have Spider-Man, and in theory, we still have Days Gone.
So Days Gone is the weirdest one out of that bunch because it was a no-show at PSX. There was a BCD demo at E3 last year. It was a no-show at PSX. And then on stage with Greg, actually, Shuhei said it's a 2018 game. But no trailers or marketing material has actually said, to my knowledge anyway, maybe I missed it, but I don't think they've actually formally said 2018 mm-hmm. for that. And it's been pretty quiet. Like we haven't really heard anything about it yet this year. Whereas we've gotten, obviously, we got the God of War date and we got the Detroit date, and like Spider-Man's quiet too. I feel like that one, I don't know, like assuming it has a big E3 and they show us it's actually a game, I can still see that one being this year. Dreams, I think, needs a beta before it can come out because it needs that user-generated content. Like they need people to spend time with it.
Yeah, I mean, I can see Dreams being a thing that just comes out in like July or August, like in a beta form even of let people play with this, and it, you can do stuff for free on in VR, you could do stuff in non-VR. And then Spider-Man, I mean, I still imagine it's gonna be their fall tentpole game.
Yeah, especially that plus like if we do live in a world where Kingdom Hearts is actually coming out this year, I can see like Kingdom Hearts being a huge third-party pillar for them, and then Spider-Man being the big first
one. And clearly they don't, I mean, they have so many third party, like if Red Dead doesn't slip, they have Red Dead as a third-party pillar. They're probably still going to have that Call of Duty.
I mean, I guess you're right, though. I was going to say third-party exclusive, but I guess you're right that like Call of Duty and Red Dead do have those exclusive content deals.
Yeah, it's
like,
and then there's the Spyro rumors, which that isn't like the biggest thing in the world, but if those three Spyro games come out again this fall.
Man, this year's getting busy already.
Yeah, which is why to me, like, yes, exactly. Which is why to me, Days Gone feels like the one thing that like doesn't have a place this year, unless it's like The Last Guardian was, where it's like first week of December, but that always feels like where games get sent to die.
Yeah.
Because
it's like, well, everyone spent their holiday money already. Like,
well, and that's not like, it's weird because the last big game is in, not as in like AAA, but big as in like big, like traversing a big open world game that came out in December was Far Cry 3. And I think everyone across the board would agree that was a mistake. Like that game is amazing, and I feel like it got cut off from a lot of awards consideration. It probably didn't help its sales. Mm-hmm. Like I think that game could have done better if it had been maybe a little earlier in the fall.
Yeah.
Or like if it had been Q1 or something.
Yeah.
So Days Gone, I don't know, maybe it slips into like Q1 of 2019. Yeah. Like maybe
they feel like a first week of February game. And I feel like if everything's sort of quiet, people would be like, oh, cool, a new big first party Sony game to play.
Yeah.
I don't think it's necessarily even a bad sign if we haven't heard anything just yet, because E3 is so close. I'm sure everyone's like trying to hold back. Like they know that they're going to get the most eyeballs. Like it's our Super Bowl. Like,
sure. Yeah.
So, I wouldn't be surprised if they had at least some kind of showing.
Yeah.
But if they don't, I would be concerned for sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Like that's when
E3,
we
yeah, it's like at E3, there's no excuses at that point. I mean, but there's like completely separate departments to like thinking about, all right, we need to get these marketing materials out. Mm-hmm. You know, we need to remind people that it's coming out and put in a release date or whatever it is. But that's like mostly not what the developers are focused on. They're like, we're going to keep our heads down and make this game.
Make our thing.
And then, and then like, you know, we'll take this little slice of it for E3 at some point. But like, you have to set aside time to do that.
Yeah. And the thing that worries me about that at E3 is that, you know, the other games we mentioned coming to PS4 that are 2019, 2020 are going to be Death Stranding, which I assume will be big at E3. Ghost of Tsushima, which I assume maybe at E3, maybe held till PSX or Paris. And then Last of Us 2, which we know is going to be at E3. And The Last of Us is worrisome because that and Days Gone are both sort of post-apocalyptic, zombie-ish survival games. But clear, like, with there's no question that people are more excited for The Last of Us than Days Gone. So I feel like showing both of those things at E3 would be a mistake for Days Gone.
Yeah.
Almost like the whole zombie theme is a little.
Is a little. And unless you're like.
In Days Gone, they're freakers, not zombies.
Oh, yeah. And in The Last of Us, they're cordyceps.
Yeah, that's true. I think the thing that Days Gone needs to show is what is the game. Like, we've seen these very specific, like, this is one scenario, you're running away from the horde or whatever, but like, isn't it supposed to be like an open world motorcycle game? Like, have we literally seen any of that?
Yeah, it's supposed to be an open world game. I got the. I've seen the motorcycle. I got to play some of the open world stuff. I think I snuck into a thing for judges when I wasn't a judge and no one told me to leave. And
yeah,
I played it.
That one was where you like stealthed in.
Yeah. And so I feel like, I don't know, all that stuff's there. But yeah, I agree. Like, we need to, I don't know. I like the idea of the seasons changing and like doing one mission in winter is different than doing it in the rain, is different than doing it in the sun.
It's like Pokemon Go has those weather effects.
It's exactly like Pokemon Go.
I'm trying to make Pokemon Go happen.
Oh, he already made it happen. It was the biggest game. You're so good.
That's true. All because of Andrew.
He caught his Mewtwo.
I did. It was good.
Oh, congratulations.
Proud of you.
Hey, thank you.
Sticking with E3, games we know, well, not games we know, but people we know for sure are going to be at E3. Bethesda has been, I guess Bethesda and EA are the first ones to sort of mark their flag in the sand. So tell us what's going on with Bethesda.
Bethesda is returning to Sunday night. I think this is the third year in a row. Third press conference, third year that they're doing Sunday. 6:30 p.m. Same slot they took last year. Last year, I think it was pretty much consensus. I mean, feel free to disagree, but like it felt like they didn't quite have enough to justify a press conference last year.
Mm-hmm.
Not that Wolfenstein 2 and Evil Within 2 aren't exciting, but it just like it really felt like they were dragging it out to even fill 40 minutes last year.
Yeah, Bethesda was at a weird place last year because they didn't have their Elder Scrolls / Fallout pillar, and Prey had just come out. And so they had cool stuff like Evil Within and Wolfenstein and the Dishonored Death of the Outsider, but again, it didn't feel like it was enough. And those three games came out in the fall, and they all performed really well, or critically really well, but then we know sales-wise didn't. And they immediately got cut, you know, in half price-wise. They were $30, like, a couple weeks later. And so that was worrisome. But all those games are out the door, and we don't know what Bethesda's working on right now.
They're being real secretive.
They
got big projects.
Which is...
What was it? Like, Crazy and Big was the...
What Todd Howard... I'm pretty sure that's what Todd...
Big and Crazy, something like that.
Yeah. So, like, do you think that at this showing we see the Elder Scrolls 6... Is it too soon?
Well,
we see a third pillar to their giant open world games.
The weird thing is, like, it depends on how much you trust Todd Howard, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's the thing where, like, for the last, two or three years, like, post Fallout 4, he keeps talking about how, we have 7 projects in the works. And he was including, like, Fallout 4 VR, and he was including some stuff that's come out. I think Skyrim on Switch was included in that count. Like, that was all part of the Bethesda Game Studios count. But now I feel like, I don't know, like he's talked before about how they have 2 crazy, huge, big.
It's like a suggestion whatever. That there's a few new IPs.
And they were open that Elder Scrolls 6 is coming, but they said at least 2 Fallout size games are coming first. And so like that's where I get confused. Like I kind of don't believe them. I kind of think they'll just announce Elder Scrolls 6 and that's next.
Or like
but,
Skyrim on iOS. Like the last platform?
That's the last bastion, yeah.
I swear if they say Skyrim on that stage again, I'm going to lose my mind. Like
if we have to keep writing about Skyrim.
Yeah. That name again.
Skyrim was the first fall we were covering games.
That's right. Yeah. It came out, that first November.
Yeah.
It's just so insane to me. Like there are all those rumors out there about like, what if the next Elder Scrolls game returns to Skyrim, like rather than focusing on the new continent or whatever. And it's like, oh my God, just stop it. Just like, let it go. It's like James Cameron with Avatar. Like, you got
to
stop.
Stop trying to make Skyrim. Well, they're not trying to make Skyrim a thing. They made Skyrim a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm curious if the sort of the lack of sales reception of some of those games you mentioned earlier may have switched some things around, and instead of taking risks with a new IP, maybe it was like, guys, like, we know Skyrim's gonna work, just get the next Elder Scrolls out there, like, shift resources around, show it now. For I don't know, I don't think you could show it at E3. I don't think it's far enough along to be like, and it's out in November. Like, I don't think it's at that point with Fallout 4.
Yeah, I mean, when did Fallout 4 ship? That was 2015?
Yeah, it was shown at their first conference at 2015.
Yeah.
Well, no, that would have been 2016, right?
So I guess it's been... Yeah, I don't think it's been long enough. I mean, like, maybe. I don't know, maybe. But like, they love being unpredictable, right? So who knows?
Yeah. I mean, we assume, like, I think it's about time we see Doom 2. Doom 1 sold really well. It came to Switch.
Mm, true.
That's that makes sense, just because of how well it did.
Yeah, totally. And so, and we know they've been working on stuff for a while, but like... I don't know,
And also, by the way, Barrett, I saw you put that Rage logo up on the screen earlier.
No one wants Rage. Get it
out
of
there.
Not
to acknowledge it.
Why is it zooming in?
For people watching the video version, our producer Barrett is putting the Rage logo on the screen because he was the one who liked it, I guess.
I promise there's two things we're not going to see. Rage 2 and Wet 2.
Yeah.
Mm.
Brink 2.
What?
Brink
2? Yeah. We're definitely not going to see Brink 2. Why? Anytime they try to make a game with one word, it just fails.
Yeah.
I guess except for Doom.
Yeah.
What about Quake? Do you think Quake could come back?
Didn't it just come out?
No, but like a
oh, like proper Quake? Maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because what was the thing that came out? Quake Champions?
Yeah, that was like sort of a arena shooter.
Yeah.
I was surprised they didn't do a New Vegas-esque Fallout 4 companion thing.
Yeah.
Like I really thought that was coming. And I don't know if they've just decided to lean away from that.
But I mean, the thing was, New Vegas was Obsidian, like they outsourced it.
But that's
right?
What I mean. So, like I'm surprised they didn't hand Fallout off to like another third-party studio to just, like, do a stopgap.
Here's the engine, get something done.
Yeah. Because New Vegas, like, there are a lot of people who feel like New Vegas is better than Fallout 3. And maybe that soured them on it. Like, maybe that's why they didn't want to do it.
Yeah, we're putting together a big feature of updating our top 100 games of all time. And there were so many arguments around Fallout 2 versus Fallout 3 versus New Vegas.
New Vegas, yeah.
And I was just silent in them because I'm just like, I've never played a Fallout game. So just make the decision and we'll put it on here.
What, you don't like calculating percentages of where, you know, your shots will hit?
Oh, my vats?
Your vats.
My vats? I don't want any. The last thing was this Prey DLC thing. What was the deal with that?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, they put up a weird video on the official Prey Twitter that's just like a moon. It's like a really short little video. It's just like a shot of the moon. So maybe there's some Prey DLC coming. I didn't play it. I ended up not playing it.
Did you play it?
I liked it. I played about 10 hours of it. I liked it.
I hated the ending, and it kind of goes back to what we were talking about, like, choices, whatever.
Fake choices,
yeah.
My gut says that's not DLC and that it's a Switch port.
Oh, could be. Yeah, they've talked a lot about Switch supported.
Well, and Bethesda, I mean, we have New Colossus coming to Switch later in the year. We have, obviously, Doom and Skyrim last year. So Bethesda were one of the first early adopters to get on board, and obviously it's been successful for them because anyone who releases a quality game on Switch sees the results.
Yeah.
So. I'm totally happy for them to do that because I want every game on my Switch.
Yeah.
Like every game ever I want.
Yeah. That becomes like, I feel bad for people listening to podcasts because that's what, yeah, exactly. And Dave Lang's studio.
Yeah. Iron Galaxy, yeah.
Yeah. Their job is to port these things and like, let us do it. Mm. Man.
What about Vita? Remember Vita?
It's okay, Andrew. It's okay.
I like Vita.
I like Vita too. It's just the Switch.
Vita 2?
No. I know. I can't say those words in a row.
Vita comma.
Vita.
It's like typing to Siri. Yeah. We have to speak to Andrew now.
Well, speaking of that, a very confusing thing to try to get across to Siri and for SEO and for us writing articles is going to be whatever the next Battlefield game is, especially if it is a Battlefield World War II game called Battlefield 5.
Yeah. So the rumor right now that came out of GamesBeat was that there's a another Battlefield development because EA very publicly has been talking about Battlefield 2018 and how it's actually a thing, and they're gonna show it at they publicly confirmed it'll be shown at EA Play, which is EA's like E3 time kind of separate show. So we're gonna see the new Battlefield this year, and GamesBeat had like the title screen of a beta build that called it Battlefield V, like Battlefield 5 Roman numeral. And they said it's a World War II set, and that it was internally being called Battlefield 2, like the numeral 2, as a sequel to Battlefield 1, because it takes place in World War II. because Battlefield's naming is the most horribly confusing thing.
They're just resetting.
Ever.
That's all.
Yeah. But it's so confusing because, like, so Ryan McCaffrey laid out the mainline Battlefield numbering of just like the mainline series, and it went from Battlefield 1942 to Battlefield 2 to Battlefield 2142 to Battlefield 3 and 4, but then it was Battlefield 1, and now it would be Battlefield 5.
And that's not counting like Bad Company and Hardline.
And Bad Company 2.
And Bad Company 2. Yeah, and Vietnam.
Yeah.
They need to just do the movie style, like Battlefield 2018.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, that would honestly make it so much easier. Well, yeah. It's confusing when Doom came out, and we just called Doom. And we're like, well, there's already a game called Doom. There's also, like, when Battlefront came out, and then Battlefront 2, I'm like, well, there's already a Battlefront 2 from, like, 10 years
or
ago.
Or Xbox One.
What's the next Xbox to be called?
Yeah.
See, Sony's the only one doing this right with consoles.
Yeah.
The next console will be called the PS5.
Well, no, the next console will be called the Vita 2, and then after that it'll be...
It's not a... What if that's... They don't do a PS5, they just do Vita 2, and it's their, like, Switch hybrid?
What if they just count down from there, PS3, PS2,
they just PS2. Do it
again. Oh, they go back?
Yeah.
What happens after one?
We all
I don't know. I could kind of get behind that. It totally makes sense for me that, given Battlefield 1's success by going back to sort of... I was going to say old-timey, which seems like the worst way to describe World War I. You know, those quaint old-time mustard gas attacks. But no, God. Going back to sort of, you know, the pendulum
really.
Of these of shooters seems to be, you know, historical realism and then back to future tech with double jumps and rocket boots and, like, exoskeletons. And everyone seems to now be going back to Battlefield 1 was World War I. Call of Duty World War II is obviously World War II. So it makes sense for me to Battlefield to do this again, just whatever, flash forward 20 years from World War I. Is it going to be too similar to last year's World War II shooter if that happens? Like, do you think a World War II game can find success this year on the heels of Call of Duty World War II last year? Jesus, these are hard to say.
That's what it was forever, right? Like, there were only World War II games for so long.
Yeah. Plus, like, honestly, all of these, like, war set games are beginning to blur together for me.
Yeah.
So it's like, are any of them really all that unique when you get down to it?
Well, and that's the thing is, like, the other rumor this year is that the Call of Duty game is Black Ops 4. And so it's going to be the, whatever, like, 20th mainline Call of Duty game, but it's going to be called Call of Duty Black Ops 4.
That's the funny thing, and we talk about this a lot, but, like, Activision doesn't, like, if you look at, like, any other major publisher, they have, like, a huge stable of franchises, and, like, Activision kind of doesn't. They have, like, two or three franchises per year that they do, and they sort of, like, you know, Guitar Hero and Skylanders and Tony Hawk are great examples of, like, they milk them and milk them and milk them until they stop performing, and then they just kind of quietly drop them, you know? And so, like, Call of Duty has never been that, but they have these kind of sub-franchises within Call of Duty that are kind of getting the same treatment.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, it's like, if you look at when Call of Duty became what it is now, it was Modern Warfare 1, Call of Duty 4. And I think...
Names are bad. Names are bad.
Battlefield 3 was kind of a big return to form for Battlefield. Like, Battlefield 3 was that year where I feel like Battlefield kind of returned to being part of the conversation.
Yeah.
And then I think since then, like, those games have all been solid. They review well. Like, no one, like, majorly dislikes them. Maybe Hardline, which was kind of a weird...
Yeah, Battlefield 1 was really well received.
Yeah, for sure. So, like, I don't know. Like, I think DICE is, like, incredibly talented and can easily make a cool World War II game that would be different.
Yeah.
I find it fascinating that, like, no one knows how to do anything else than returning to what they did before. Like surely there's some other direction these games could go in.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is you can't go back any further than World War I.
Yeah.
Because, like, I don't know if you can mechanically make, especially if you are a AAA fall blockbuster shooter,
yeah.
I don't think you can make an interesting Revolutionary War or Civil War game. Yeah. I think if you weren't trying to be a giant multiplayer shooter, you could. Like, I think it's like you can make an interesting Civil War game.
Yeah, wasn't that a pitch for Call of Duty? Wasn't there, like, a...
There was the Roman one. Right?
Yeah, Roman
Call of Duty
Wars.
Roman Wars.
Yeah.
Which is just, at that point, not called... That's just Rise.
But what defines a Call of Duty or a Battlefield game? It has a gun in it.
Yeah, shooting with a apostrophe.
A lot of grays and browns.
Yeah, grays and browns. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, do you want what if there's, like, a super color? Like, what if one of these would just do the Blood Dragon route and be like, let's just make not sci-fi in terms of, like, hard grounded, like, angry sci-fi, but just, like,
something,
I don't know,
stylish,
or what we thought the future would be like in, like, the '60s, and make that have like pew pew lasers. I want more games of pew-pew lasers.
Well, or just like that movie, A Very Long Engagement.
Yeah.
It is very much a war movie, but it's also very much a love story. And it's like more from like the perspective of like a single character, or like I guess two characters,
and has a ton of magical realism in it.
Yeah, like I would love to see something like that. I would love to see like a more majorly story focused Call of Duty that, like, yes, you still have plenty, or Battlefield. I mean, either one of them could do it. Like, you still have like the multiplayer modes for all the people who are only playing that. But
so we know it. Sledgehammer has a vacancy up at the top.
Yeah.
So they bring in Jean-Pierre Jeunet, who directed Amelie and A Very Long Engagement, studio
and
head.
Alien 4.
We don't talk about that one.
Yeah.
And then your main character, instead of being like Kit Harington, is Audrey Tautou.
Yeah.
We bring her in, and it just becomes like a whimsical romp through.
That's not a bad idea. We should do like an industry swap where game developers make movies and movie directors come and make games.
I would totally be behind that. Well, sometimes when sometimes when movie directors try to make games, it doesn't go well.
Oh, like who?
Case in point, Academy Award winning director Guillermo del Toro.
We've just had great segues today, guys.
Really good.
Yeah, that's worked out.
this was a Brian Altano Photoshop. He said that was his little Oscar. That was the Kojima thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry, never mind. Brian had another Photoshop. I get Kojima and Brian confused.
I think Barrett might have Photoshopped that. I feel like it's weird that you...
No, Kojima definitely tweeted that out last night.
Oh.
I thought Barrett was going to come in and correct me, but he didn't.
Barrett may be Hideo Kojima. I've never seen them in the same room.
I think we all saw that Persona thing, so I think you're incredibly talented. But yeah, last night, Guillermo del Toro, obviously in Shape of Water, won Best Director as well as Best Picture.
Do you think it deserved Best Picture? Did you see Shape of Water?
I didn't. I'm waiting to see it for a good moment.
I liked it. I guess I maybe would have voted for it. I don't know. Like, this year had a lot of movies that I really liked that I thought were like really good or even great, but there wasn't like one I fell in love with this year. Like for me, last year, Moonlight was like very obviously my pick, and I thought it was like incredible.
So you hate Get Out?
No, I like Get Out a lot. It's just like, I don't know.
An instigator.
Oh, no.
No, I kind of agree with that, to where last year with Moonlight and La La Land, it was like two movies that I loved. And so them like fighting over the Oscar at the end, I was kind of fine with.
Yeah.
But yeah, aside from
that weird moment.
Yeah, aside from Get Out, though, they fixed it this year. It was fine.
Yeah.
How come that doesn't happen? Like, we don't have that in the Game Awards. I guess we had Joseph Farris come in. That was like the equivalent of that.
That's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you think he watched the Oscars last night?
I mean, no, he hates the... Yeah, I think he made it very clear that he's not a fan of the Oscars. Yeah. I feel like he couldn't possibly have been more clear about that.
All of a sudden, there's like a picture of him. That's investigative journalism.
Yeah.
He did watch the Oscars.
We'll never know.
Wow. We'll never know.
I'm putting it on the list.
Okay, that's good. That's good. But Del Toro, obviously, aside from, you know, directing cool movies like, you know, Hellboy and Blade 2 and Pan's Labyrinth and now Shape of Water, has had quite a storied history in video games that has literally never amounted in a video game being made, which is sort of the saddest thing ever, because he is one of those guys who's also, he has been attached to so many cool sort of nerd culture movie products that have also never been made. He was attached to The Hobbit, and he ended up leaving that. He was attached to in the Mountain of Madness, like an H.P. Lovecraft thing.
He had to leave Pacific Rim 2.
He had to leave Pacific Rim 2.
I mean, he's one of those guys who like feels like alternate reality Peter Jackson, in that like Peter Jackson and him actually have like pretty similar like weird creative backgrounds, but then Peter Jackson got to make Lord of the Rings and just has carte blanche to do whatever he wants forever.
Yeah.
And it's like, maybe with this Oscar win, that can become the rest of Guillermo del Toro's
career. Yeah, as long as it's not making games. Because if we go back to 2006, he announced a game called Sundown. It was being developed with Terminal Reality, who were the developers of Blood Rain, Kinect, Star Wars, and The Walking Dead Survival Instinct. So those aren't good. But Guillermo del Toro has been like a huge gamer his whole life, and he said that he wanted to make a Left 4 Dead game. That game was announced in 2006. I assume has been canceled because it never came out. So there, it wasn't officially canceled.
Oh for one.
In 2008, he was attached to the Halo movie. So he was going to direct the Halo movie, which him and also Peter Jackson were attached to that Alex Garland strip.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so he was going to direct the Halo movie, but then instead left to direct the Hobbit trilogy, which he then left and Peter Jackson then went to direct, which is very confusing.
Yeah.
And then in 2010, he announced a trilogy of games at the Game Awards called Insane. They announced there was one teaser trailer for a spooky game called Insane that he was going to be making with a THQ and Volition, who did Red Faction and Saints Row.
Mm-hmm.
And so we got one teaser trailer, and then they said, this is going to be a trilogy. And then on an investor call in August of 2012, bless you, Danny Bilson was like, no, we canceled it. So that never got made. So I think one thing to do there is don't announce a trilogy before you have more than a teaser.
Before you have the first one, yeah.
And then, of course, most famously, P.T. and Silent Hills. So when the Silent Hills or the PT demo came out at Gamescom 2014, you played it to the end, and then it said Hideo Kojima and Guillermo del Toro and Norman Reedus in Silent Hills. We're like, okay, so del Toro is somehow connected to this game. And then obviously when Kojima and Konami parted ways, del Toro announced that he was officially off the project, and he said, quote, I've proven to be the albatross of video games. I joined THQ and THQ goes broke. I joined Kojima and Kojima leaves Konami because of Metal Gear. I've decided, in order to not destroy anyone else's lives, I have decided that I will never again get involved in video games. Otherwise, I'll join someone and his house will explode or something.
Oh my God.
Yes.
What an emphatic quote.
And then a year and a half ago at the Game Awards, it was announced that he's in Death Stranding.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, I'm really curious what his creative input is into Death Stranding, because he's like, performing in it, it seems like
he's an actor. Yeah. I mean, I don't think he's involved. I don't want to say creatively, because actors are part of the creative process, yeah. But he's not, as far as I know, he's not writing it, he's not producing it, his money's not behind it. I think Kojima just has his like his cadre of pals that he likes putting in things with.
Yeah, I think you're exactly
right.
I'm
sure they share beers and have conversations.
Oh, absolutely. If you follow Kojima on Instagram, yeah, you can just leave, that's totally fine. No, I like to think if you follow
it's just gone. It's done.
There was a back route you could have taken. But no, if you follow Kojima on Instagram, it's really fascinating, because he has just amassed this weird, like, sort of, it reminds me of like how all the beat poets used to hang out together in San Francisco, except it's like Jordan Voight Roberts, who directed Kong, and then he's got Del Toro and Norman Reedus and Mads Mikkelsen, and then every once in a while, and like Jeff Keighley will be in these things. I'm like, what is this weird super group you've created, and how does this work? And also, how
like
do we
a new exclusive party?
Well, exactly. Yeah. It's like, how do we become best friends with Kojima? Like, I've interviewed him a couple times, but he's never like,
well, that's the never question on his, you never ask.
I'm never on his Instagram.
You could be.
I could, yeah. I don't know. I just want to be at those fancy dinners with him and Mads Mikkelsen.
Well, I feel like the funny thing to me is like, because Mads Mikkelsen has been a part of crazy successful things, and then like obviously Hannibal canceled, and like I'm sure he's seen both sides of the spectrum too. I saw those little glasses or mask or whatever that was. But I think that
anyone listening, you sound insane.
Thanks, Barrett. I think that there's this really interesting kind of like Kojima's collaborators are all people who I think have found success despite what is expected in Hollywood. Like, they're all people who like buck trends and like make these weird artistic things that then like find their niche and take off. So I think like a lot of them, because of that, like by trying to fit into the mold, don't really do well. I think Mads Mikkelsen like was in Star Wars obviously, and then has done
he was in Casino Royale.
Yeah, he's done like more and more big stuff that like he's maybe a little bit the exception. But with Guillermo del Toro, totally makes sense that they would eventually have connected, because I think they're guys who like are very like, they're auteurs, they really like what they like, they control every inch of a thing, and they really maybe make things that are weird or outside of the norm.
Yeah.
So like I think no matter how Del Toro is connected, like it's actually really exciting to me that like looking at this long list, like knowing that he has a game come out that he like actually like positively contributed to that might potentially be really, really good, is like just kind of a sweet like, oh, you did it.
Well, it's just funny that like if, assuming in an alternate world where Kojima and Konami never had their split up and Silent Hills did come out, it probably wouldn't be out yet, but we'd be like ramping up coverage of it. Mm-hmm. And they'd now be able to put from Academy Award winning director Guillermo del Toro. Like, no matter what creative role he had, if he was just a producer, like Del Toro won Best Director and Best Picture at the Academy Awards, and no one can ever take that away from him. Well, they probably can. Frances McDormand got hers stolen last night. So, I guess, so technically, someone can physically take it from you, but they can't take the accolade away from you.
Yeah.
Which would, I don't know, I feel like that would have been huge for a game, and sort of in that ongoing, like, really boring fight of trying to legitimize video games as an art form. Like, that's just one more, like, all right, just the old people can get out of the way. Yes, it's a legitimate art form. It's fine.
Still
look,
doing that?
Look, I mean, somebody it comes up every once in a while. Yeah. Those people are getting it. It's the same people who were like, Get Out is not an Oscar film. I'm like, no, you're just racist. You're just racist. That's all it is. I don't know how I got there.
Movies.
Yeah,
movies.
I think it was movies' fault. Yeah. Well, that was our show this week.
We did good. That was a terrible segue.
Oh, no.
You messed up our segue.
Well, I didn't have, my thing was I didn't have another thing.
Yeah.
Oh, that's true.
I always have another thing.
Blank page.
Just a blank page, yeah. But we're going to have
actually all we're looking at right now.
Yeah,
it's a fresh start. This is for you to fill in now.
It's a taboo. Oh, oh wow. That. Yeah, I mean, it kind of
there
is.
You
yeah.
Go.
But no, March is a pretty cool month for PlayStation. We have a ton of stuff.
Yeah.
Ni No Kuni 2 is coming out. Far Cry is coming out. I'm pretty sure we can say that we're going to be playing God of War soon. People have been posting, like Corey posted that they're on their preview event in Paris. So
yeah, I think it's safe to say there will be some cool God of War coverage coming. And also though, like I think that's common sense. Like I think like in the ramp to release, like they have to hit that one last beat of like show us what this game is before you're in like the home stretch.
MLB The Show is coming out. So we'll bring on Ryan for a segment.
Yeah.
The one person who plays MLB The Show at IGN.
Are you excited for God of War?
Yeah, in the sense that like it seems to be more of a like personal like connection kind of a story, so that's cool. But I don't know, there's all these like games like Assassin's Creed Origins I tried to get into, and I was just like, I just don't want to play another Assassin's Creed game again.
Yeah.
And a little bit I feel that way about God of War 2. Yeah. So
I think God of War's been a
God of War.
No, Siri!
Well. God of War 2!
Yeah. I think the one nice thing with God of War is that it feels like it's been long enough, and then totally it feels like the series is just grown up in this one a little bit. Like this is a father-son story as opposed to just the angry shirtless man who rips people apart, which is totally fine. You can have the angry shirtless ripping things apart
game.
You
can have all the stories and all the characters.
Exactly. But yeah, I am super excited for God of War. My big question is how does it play? Which is hopefully we're going to find out soon because everything looks cool. The story looks great. The game visually looks amazing. But how does it actually feel? You're just going to still be playing Pokemon.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
It is nice to see though that like the industry and like a lot of the games that we're playing are growing up and maturing a lot, and they're exploring stuff that are more interesting.
Yeah.
Well, and Sony's doing a really good job of that, I think. And Sony, the other, we didn't have the story on here, but they've doubled down on wanting, they want to like put a lot of time and money into first party studios making more of these games. And they have said before that like they are still super invested in AAA single player narrative driven games. So there, then you see that the proof is in the pudding. It's not just them saying that. You see that with Horizon. You see that with Detroit, Spider-Man, God of War, like Last of Us, Death Stranding. You know, they're, while a lot of the industry is going towards games as a service or sort of trying to be like, what's going to, like, how we become the next PUBG or Fortnite, or we need the next hero shooter. Sony seems fine with the course they have and sticking to it, which has made sense because this generation, they're far and away in the lead.
Yeah, and they're just cultivating the talent. Like the Worldwide Studios is such a good stable of like solid talent that I like that they trust their creators. Like it seems like they like are allowing their devs to tell the stories they want to tell. There doesn't seem to be any kind of like mandate from on high that you need like this genre. Like those studios. I mean, from the outside, who knows? But from the outside, it looks like that they really are able to kind of go in the direction they want to.
Yeah,
which is cool.
Which is very exciting. Yes, very cool time to be covering Sony. That was Beyond episode 534. You can find us all on Twitter. I am at McBiggity. Andrew, where are you?
I'm Garfep.
Is that a word?
We used to say it stood for a thing I can't say anymore. So the new joke is that it stands for going all around finding every Pokemon.
Oh, that's perfect for you.
Yeah. Thank you.
I'm just, you know, Tina Amini, super lame. No,
what does that mean?
Acronym.
That's just your name.
My first name is a flower in Iran, and my last name means honesty in Farsi. So it's good that I became a journalist, right?
That's
good.
Really.
I like that there's like you have a doppelganger that's like the lying bush or something, like the lying shrub. You're like, oh no, I must find her.
And then we fight.
Yeah, and then
we
fight.
Persona style game.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah, my last name means gold color in German. I don't know what my first
gold
name
color?
Means.
Gold color? I like that.
That's what gold color means. I mean, I have one of my things I love the most I have my desk is a Mario box from Gamescom that it's a gold coin. It was a pre-order bonus for New Super Mario Bros. 2, and it says Gold Farbenez on it because my last name means gold color, and it's cool. And I got it from Germany, and it is on my desk.
That is all the perfect little
intersection. Yeah, that's intersection. That's your brand.
Thanks, man.
Yeah. Proud of you. For Tina, Andrew, and Marty, this has been Beyond episode 534, and we will see you all next week.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it. Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.